Vov Teves, Monday the 9th of December, Rabbi Honason Ziskind, Beauty in the Eye of the Jewish Beholder.
I believe that the spirit of Hanukkah is still in the air. I don't know if the smell of latkes still permeates the kitchen walls, but perhaps what we say will have a little bit of a connection to Hanukkah, but it's really relevant to all year round. The Shamshon of Olhesh writes, when he speaks about the three sons of Noach, Shem, Chom, and Yefes, and he describes that these three individuals really represent three main characters in humanity. Now, I'm going to say it in my understanding, or in my language, and I hope that it'll stim with what he says, that it will connect with what he says. We could say the following way. There are some people who, when they do something, they ask themselves, what do I feel like doing? And they do what they feel like doing. Some people ask, what's the nice thing to do? I want to do things that are nice. And some people ask themselves, what's the right thing to do? Because they want to do the right thing. And that perhaps sums up Shem, Chom, and Yefes. Chom is the lashon from taiva, cham, chamimus, it's heat, passion, taiva, what I feel like doing, what's comfortable to do. That's chom. And chom says, I do what I feel like doing. Yefes, according to one explanation, is an expression of yoifi, beauty. What is nice? What's the elegant thing to do? Doesn't matter if it costs too much money. Doesn't matter perhaps if it's not exactly in line with the Torah, but does it look nice? Is it presentable? That's Yefes. So he wants to know, what's the nice thing to do? And he likes to do the nice thing. And then you have Shem, and Shem means the name. And we know in Yiddishkeit, name always represents essence. The name of the thing is what the thing is. Okay? I just had a baby now, 3 weeks ago. You have to call your child a name. It's a very, very central idea in Judaism. The husband and the wife, the mother and the father deciding what the name is. Grandparents waiting to hear what the name is. It's a big deal what the name is. Because we believe that a name really goes into the essence of the neshama and has a hashpo, an influence on the child. So, Shem represents the essence, the real thing, the right thing, the correct thing. What is the MS? What does Hashem really want? So, Shem says, what's the right thing to do? Now, we all know the story of Hanukkah was the Greeks, was Yavon, and Yavon comes from Yefes. And Yavon were into what's called beauty, whether it was art, architecture, philosophy, beauty of the mind, beauty of the body, displaying the body. It's unbelievable how much art, although people, most, I don't know today anymore if you can say it, but generally people walk around clothed, but when you make it into art, all of a sudden anything goes. And that's what Yefes and Yavon want to do, bring upon the Yiddish nation, or to the whole world really, the idea of beauty, but beauty which is limited in the eye of the beholder, limited of how we see it, as human beings see it. And nothing that can transcend to a higher level. So whatever they understand as beauty, as physical beauty, and even beauty again, I say of the mind, the philosophy in them, that's whatever's beautiful and nice, as long as it's within the realms of human understanding and human sight. The thing is, we find in the Torah quite a few times the Torah points out that something was really physically beautiful. When it comes to sorrow, we know the Torah tells us she was very, very beautiful. The whole ordeal with Paroi. In fact, the Gemara goes and tells us who are the most beautiful women, and sorrow was amongst them. Rochov, I think, Esther, according to one pshat, and the Gemara says, according to one opinion, Esther wasn't exactly very beautiful. Yerak Roikis Hoysa, but the Gemara says a substitute Vashti for her instead. And the Gemara goes discussing who the most beautiful women in history were. Actually, Tosas asked Akasha, and Tosas says, why isn't Chava mentioned in the list? Why isn't Chava? Chava was the most beautiful. The Gemara says that Sora, who was considered one of the most beautiful women, is that she was like a monkey in comparison to Chava. Like a human to a monkey, is Chava would be to Sora. There was no comparison. Sora Chava must have been extremely so much more beautiful. So Tosfos answers and says, we're only discussing people who are born from a mother. People who are born. Masha'en came as Chava was created by Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's a different league. We're discussing a different league. So I just, again, we've just been saying Hallel. You know, we say, Evan, Moasa, Boini, Moisoy, Hoysol, Roish, Pino. So, I think it's the Malvim, it's going a while back, and he says an interesting chat. He said, Evan, Moasa, Haboinim. Evan can be referring to women. Women go into the cloud of what's called Binyan. Vayiven es Hatzelo, the Pasuk says. Vayiven es Hatzelo. Shmuel, who built the Tzelo, the side of Adam Arishan, and from which he formed Chavo. A lot of Binyan, and there are many other ideas. Where we find the binyan by a woman. So Evan represents the woman. Evan, Moa Soha Boinim. Boinim is builders. And we know Talmid Chachomim are called builders. So he says like this, the Evan, the woman, which means Chava, that Evan, Moa Soha Boinim, the Talmid Chachomim, the Gemara, despised her. They never included her in the list. They left her out. Hoysala Roish Pino, she's the greatest. She's the Roish Pino. She's the greatest of them all. How come she was left out? And the answer is, Me'eis Hashem Ha'isazois. She's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You see, a couple of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the creation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that doesn't come into our list over here. But you see that the Torah is going around telling us who the most beautiful, it seems to be something quite important in really physical beauty. Physical beauty. In fact, the Ramban on Parashat Vayishlach says that Dina was also very, very beautiful. But then the Torah doesn't tell us. For example, Rivka, the Torah tells us that she was beautiful. Rochel, the Torah tells us. Leah, the Gemara says, Eine Leah Rakos, and the Orach Chaim asks, why is the Torah pointing out bad features of somebody? Is it an Indian to point out something not so nice? We'll come to that in a moment. But I call upon him, the three of the four were outstanding in beauty, and the Torah went to tell us that they were beautiful women. So the Ramban says, why doesn't the Torah tell about Dina? So Ramban says because a tragedy occurred from it. The reason why Shechem ben Chamor took her was because he was attracted by this beauty. So a kilkul came out, something negative came out of the story, and therefore the Torah doesn't want to mention this idea. Which again, we'll have to talk about that as well. It's important for us. Now, the pasuk says by Yefes, Yaft Elokim le Yefes veYishkoin bo'ohal Hashem. VeYishkoin. So Yaft Elokim Yefes. The few pshatim, I want to just maybe say one or two. One of them is Yafti Lekim Yefes is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yafti is an expression of broadness. Rashi brings us down. Wide, broad. And this is referring to the Beis HaMikdosh Hasheni which also came from Yefes. Poras. Malchus Poras, which was Koiresh, gave permission to build the second Beis HaMikdosh and he helped along, is also from the dynasty of Yefes. And the second Beis HaMikdosh was actually much greater, much bigger than the first Beis HaMikdosh. Yafti Lekim LeYefes. Yefes had this possibility of creating a much bigger Beis HaMikdosh. But Vyishkoin Bo'al Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't reside in the second Beis HaMikdosh like he did in the first, and it says that the Shechina that was in the first Beis HaMikdosh did not exist in the second Beis HaMikdosh. Many things were missing in the second Beis HaMikdosh. It even says that people, those great people who were still alive from the time of the second Beis HaMikdosh, from the first Beis HaMikdosh who were still around in the second, were crying when they saw the second Beis HaMikdosh. They realized what a difference there was. Okay, so that's one pshat. But there's another pshat that the Gemara Megillah discusses. Yafti Lekim LeYefes, like we said, a loshen from Yoifi, beauty. Yafti Lekim LeYefes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a certain beauty to Yefes. It's a quality. It's a quality to reckon with. Okay? But V'yishkon Bo'al Hashem, and that beauty can be brought into the tents of shame. That means by the Jewish people, we can use that beauty. It's something to reckon with and something to be used in Avodas Hashem, let's say. So the Gemara says, for example, that Greek is the most beautiful language. And one is allowed to write the Sefer Torah in Greek. It's a kosher Sefer Torah. You put it up on a Kodesh, you open it up. It will look like very interesting letters and so on. But it'll be a kosher Sefer Torah. The Rambam writes says we don't do that today, and others because we're not Bukiim in today. The same Greek of today is the original Greek. If that's the beautiful language. So we don't do it. But there is this idea of bringing inside Torah the idea of Yefes, the beauty of Yefes. Okay, having said all that, Rabbi Akiva Tatz pointed out on one of his shurim a Gemara in Tanis that speaks about one of the Tanoim, Rabbi Shur ben Hananiah. That's why I heard it. I think it's a Gemara, but the Tzushal I heard from him, and he said The Gemara discusses Rabbi Shimon Hananya that one of the daughters of the Caesar was walking in the street and she saw him, and so she asked him, how can such great wisdom be contained in such an ugly vessel? It was seen that Rabbi Yeshua was a very ugly person, and she was she was disturbed by this difference, that such beautiful wisdom, such Torah, such chokhmah, how can be contained in such an ugly vessel? To which he replied, and he asked her, what do you keep your father, what does he keep his wine in? And so she said, in some clay or something like that, some clay barrels of some sort. And he said, well, such special wine that you have there, perhaps it would be better to keep it in beautiful vessels of gold and silver. And so she went back to the palace, and they followed her advice, and they transferred all the wine into gold and silver. And when it was served in front of the king sometime later, and he tasted the wine, it wasn't, it had kind of reacted with the metal. And so it didn't taste good. So he said to his daughter, so where do you get this whole idea from? So she said, yeah, the rabbi, the local Orthodox rabbi, he has this brilliant idea. So he got him called in, and he asked him, what's happening over here? So he told her, listen, your daughter asked me the question, and I explained to her, this is the answer I explained to her, that, you know, sometimes good stuff comes in packaging which is not so beautiful on the outside. So she wasn't so happy with that, and she asked him a further question and said, so tell me, how come there are some really great rabbis who are really beautiful? Okay, I don't know who she was referring to, but there are Gemaras who speak about beautiful rabbonim as well. Rabbi Yochanan, for example, he used to sit in the place where the women would come so they should see him and have beautiful children. One of the Asura Ruga Malchus, Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, he was the daughter of one of the Caesars, also saw him and begged to save his life because he was so beautiful. And they had him skinned, his face skinned alive and preserved for its beauty. So there were great rabbonim. So what did Rabbi Yeshua answer back to that? So Rabbi Yeshua answered back and said, had they been ugly, they would have been even greater. In other words, they were great despite the fact that they were so beautiful. So here we see a little bit different. Here we see, wow, the more beautiful the outside, something gets spoiled from the inside. From the inside. And then generally speaking, you know, Sheker Achein, Hevel HaYoifi, and that kind of, what we used to, and really what we grow up with today, is we try to, you know, with ourselves, within Chinuch, and in our lives, we try to discount the externalities and the beauty. It's not something we look at as such a compliment or such a positive attribute that we need to concentrate on. And so why is that? How do we sit with both of these? On the one hand, the Torah has given us and told us that, you know, describes the Imoz as being beautiful. On the one hand, we see and we taught that perhaps that's not where our focus should be. So how do we handle with this? So Rav Dessler writes concerning Adam and Chava, before the Chet, they were not clothed. They never had any clothing. You know why? Because the vessel never disturbed our focus of what was inside. In other words, when you looked at Adam and Chava, even though they didn't have any clothing on, you never got distracted. You saw straight through into the neshama. The kli, the externality was such that all it did was help you understand better what was inside. It showed you the beauty of what was inside. You could see directly inside. And therefore, there was a necessity for clothing. But once he did the chet, Adam Mishra did the chet, and now our judgment and the way we see things are radically different. We're now looking with a different eye, with the eye which has a Yetzirah inside. And now we can't see things like that anymore. Now we get too distracted with the externalities. And they disturb us and they make it vague. We can't get to what's inside, into the neshama, into the reality. And therefore, the first thing Adam Rishon did was he made some sort of clothing to cover himself very minimally. HaKadosh Baruch Hu later on came and added on and said, you know, you've got to get dressed completely. And we actually learn from that not only one should cover oneself in order to take away that external disturbance that we have, but actually to enhance and to actually access what is inside. So clothes don't only just protect that we shouldn't be distracted by the externality, it actually enhances and to see what's better. We can actually see what, for, I mean, a typical example, you see somebody dressed in a fireman suit, not only is he modest, yeah, but he's also, you can see, he's a fireman, so it tells you what this guy does. So when a person walks around with a white shirt and a you know, a black hat, you know, he's one of these robotic kind of religious fanatic people, you kind of get to know a little bit what's inside. But the idea is that the clothing should kind of, yes, That was a joke. Do they record the laughter on the recording as well?
They record it highly as well.
So, so the clothes actually also present the person. You should actually get an idea of what's actually happening inside him. You know, I remember. I don't know if I have, we have a few minutes. I remember a joke a friend of mine once told me in yeshiva. He said to me, there was a fella, he said, yeah, I was learning in the mirror, and one day this fellow walked inside, and he had about three earrings hanging outside the one of his ears. In those days, earrings still was more or less concentrated on the ear area, you understand? Today, it could be anywhere in the body, but yeah, ripped jeans kind of stuff, or, you know, hair like hanging over. And he said, you know, can I use the bathroom? So my friend says to me, I said to him, yeah, just go straight down the corridor. When you see the sign that says gentleman, just ignore the sign and just go straight on in. clothing should enable us to see what's inside. And that's why the face is not covered, because the face, which is the ponim, lets us see what's the pnim. The face always lets us get inside anyway. The face doesn't have to be covered. The face is what lets us see the pnim. It's still that place where we can get a little bit of access on what's happening inside the person. And therefore, it doesn't distract us. In fact, you're not opposite. It lets us see what's inside, and that we don't cover. So now, we see that once we were distracted from the outside, we got distracted by the externalities, we now have to clothe the body, for example. I want to read a little piece of Dorash Moshe for Moshe Feinstein. I want to read a little bit inside, because the way he puts it down is really beautiful. He says as follows. He says, you know, Asor had another name called Yisko, which is in end of Parshas Noach. Tells us how Avraham Avinu got married, and his brother Nochor got married, and they got married to the daughters of Horon. Who's Horon? Horon is Avi Milko Vavi Yisko. Horon was the father of Milko and Yisko. So Rashi tells Yisko, this is Sorrow. Why was she called Yisko? So Rashi brings three pshatim. Rashi says one pshat is Loshen Shesoyche Beruach HaKodesh. She could see with Ruach HaKodesh. The second pshat is that everybody would Soyche BeYofyo. Everybody would look at her beauty. And the third pshat is Loshen Nesicha, which is a Loshen from like a minister or a Sroros, which is the same idea as Soro, as the idea of Soro itself. And Nesicha is, I think, a princess. Yeah. Okay, but so you ask, what's this great? The Torah is telling us, Shakol Mistaklim, Akol Soichim BeYofyo. Everybody's looking at her beauty. This is something, again, in Yiddish, in, you know, our religious surroundings, this is something that we don't consider an ideal, looking at the beauty. So he writes like this: L'chora pirush Shakol Soichim BeYofyo hu inyan chulin. Looking at a beauty, that's not something which is holy. Ve'ein ze shvach letzadekes. Is that a praise for a tzadekes? Aval nir demar shehashem yisborach nosan es ha'toyer liyisrael shehem b'nei odom. The fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Torah to flesh and blood, to human beings, ve'yesh lohen kol inyonei chayei hevel, v'chol ha'tayves. And we're people, we're humans who have full of, you know, we run after nonsense things, and we're full of passion and tayves and things that we like to do, that we feel like doing. Harei Rutakin is calling on Masiv, that the Torah wants us to use these in Yonim, interact, and somehow the Torah should have a hashpo and influence on these ideas, and perhaps better them. Sha'af in Yonim Agashimim, Yiyu L'shvach L'Hashem Yisbarach L'chvoide. Even these physical attributes should be used in praise and the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So then he brings the Gemara says like this: Sha'asidin Ilone Sirak Lasis Peiris. In future, trees which are barren, which don't produce fruit, oh, when Mashiach will come, even those trees will be bearing fruit. We're looking for more pleasures when Mashiach comes. We haven't got enough fruit around. We need some more. Today, in our level of our observance of the Torah and our good deeds, we're very low. We're the lowest generation that's been. Halavai, we today will be able to use our physical world all for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Halavai. But we're not on that level, and we're very limited. Very limited on actually doing what we're supposed to do. But la'osid lavoi, when there will be a much higher level, fakir, the opposite is true. The more gashmias, the more pleasures there will be, the more we will have what to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, we'll use all these physical attributes to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Concerning Sarah and her level, yes, even her beauty she was able to use as a shvach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in a way of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah pointing out, when it comes to these great women, on their great level, their beauty, it was definitely a way to bring out, or to show, and to be mechaved HaKadosh Baruch Hu with their beauty. He just says that when people would look at her, that would be a Kiddush Hashem, so to speak. They would see, wow, this is a great lady. And when they would see her looks, it would bring them to realize her internal greatness. But that was because of Sarah, who she was. And therefore we could say that this idea really depends on our level, where we're holding. In other words, when we're holding on such a level where we see beauty and we just astounded, it just brings us close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we see the neshama through, and it makes us say, a Kiddush Hashem, this is a beautiful person with a beautiful face, is then beauty has its place. In fact, in a certain way, the world, Jewish people today, for example, our the way the goyim look at us is not always in a good light. And I'm not saying it's anybody's fault. It could be even the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts suffering sometimes upon us. And there are problems with us. And goyim look at that and say, you know, if Hashem really loves his Jewish people, so but look at them, they're downtrodden, they're fighting for survival, and these problems. It doesn't look so beautiful on the outside. But in Mitzvah Hashem, we hope that our externality, yeah, we know that that's external. We know what's important. So we have tzoras, but it's much more important. How are we dealing with it? What's internal? But they don't see it. But had they would see it, it would obviously be a greater Kiddush Hashem if the outside would match also the inside. We could just say maybe two more points. That is that beauty as an externality in our days, like we say, it's very dangerous. We're not going to be able to use it in the way that the great people were able to use it. Mr. Shem Moshiach come will be able to. But definitely we see from the Torah that in the realms of marriage, there definitely has a very special place. I just want to point out one, a very famous fact, that we know that the kiyor, that's the basin, which the Kohen used to wash from before they began avodah in the Mishkan, was made of mirrors. That's right, with mirrors which the ladies had used to make themselves look beautiful for their husbands. In this realm, as definitely something which we find is brought into the Mishkan, in our Mishkan Ma'at, our own homes, this is definitely the place that it should be used, and that's a very, very positive thing. Of course, when it goes into the outside, where there it gets distorted, there one has to be very, very careful. The Pasuk says, Zekei Livan Veyu. Zekei Livan Veyu. This is my God, I will make him beautiful. According to Amshat, I will make him beautiful. So the Gemara says that from this we learn to make a mitzvah, we should make it in a beautiful way. I often have to buy a lulavim and esrogim for various newcomers to Yiddishkeit and so on. And so I go and I select and I pick them out. And so I ask them, you know, what kind do you like? So that I should kind of, you know, everybody has their own taste in Sroegim, Lovim, how should look, a tall lulav, a shorter lulav, and so on. So I want him to feel comfortable with his lulav, so I ask him, what do you want? So one time, he was holding by the hat and jacket stage already. He wasn't holding by the stage of speaking June Chazos HaShatz yet. He was still, you know, that was still like a problem. Anyway, but he was wearing a hat and jacket, and he said to me, I want a nice smooth esrog. I said to him, why a smooth esrog? He said, oh, that's beautiful, that's nice. So I said to him, my dear friend, let me just tell you something, that you know, real bumpy esrog in halacha is much more of a hiddur. It's one of the simone esrogim, that if it has a lot of bumps on it, that's a hiddur. He's Israeli. I said, yeah. He said, oh, I didn't know. I said, well, maybe you want to think about it. He says to me, okay, so get me a bumpy esrog, but not too bumpy. That was his thing. So again, it brings me the idea, when we look at things in the world, do we look at it with a Yiddish cook and say, that's beautiful because Halacha says it's beautiful, because the Torah says it's beautiful, or because we have our own opinions? Of course, there will come a time when you come to, you know, the guy came to the Rav and he bought two Esrogim, he never come to the Rav with one. So he comes to two, which is better? And the Rav looks at both of them and he says, they're both fine, they're both muhuda, they're both great, they're both, yeah. He says, oh, but Rabbi, tell which one is more beautiful? He says, go and ask your wife. There is a time when, eventually, after all is settled, you've gone through all the Shulchan Aruch and Torah, fine, and now you want to decide, fine, it's personal taste, same as in clothing. There's a certain gather that we have to have in clothing, should match the Torah after that. There's plenty of scope for various patterns and designs, as long as it's obviously beautiful in the eyes of the Torah, one can then take it a stage further and make sure that it's beautiful in one's own eyes. So when we're looking at an etzer, we have to say that it's beautiful in the eyes of the Torah. I'll just tell you one or two stories. There's a story about Rabbi Akiva Eiger. There was a fellow who came one time, maybe into the shul or to a gathering of people, and he began to tell them what a beautiful parade he had seen in the town. Well, the costumes and the dance and the music, and it was fantastic. And he was telling them how beautiful this parade was. Anyway, some week or two later, there was a bris in the shul, and this fellow happened to be standing a bit close up, and he saw what was happening, and he kind of turned away in disgust, and he said, "Uy, disgusting." And Rabbi Akiva Eiger heard both comments, and he called him over, and he said to him, "Let me tell you, Rabbi Yid, this bismillah, that's beautiful. The parade that you saw last week, that's disgusting. That's nothing to be proud of. When you look at things, what's beautiful, we've got to look with the Yiddish and say, that's beautiful, that's beautiful." Rabbi Chonon Wasserman was once collecting money for his yeshiva, or many occasions he had to collect money for his yeshiva. He was once going on his way to visit a very wealthy man. And when he arrived at the door, he looked at his boots and he'd seen, after going through the wintry snow and mud and so on, that he was going to mess up the carpets in this nice wealthy man's house. And so he decided to come through the kitchen, the back door. He knocks on the back door, and they let him inside. And the owner stands and says to him, "Rabbi Chonon, why through the back door?" He says, "Look at my boots. Don't want to ruin your beautiful carpet." He said, "Rabbi Chonon, you're ruining my daughters." He must have had a couple of daughters. "You're ruining my daughters." And he said, "My daughters are going to think that my carpets are worth to me more than Talmidei Chachamim, than Torah. Please go out of this door. Knock on the front door. Come back and tread on my carpets. My daughters should see what's important in life." And I say, when you look at these dirty carpets, from whether it's a meshulach who walked into your house, or whatever it is, Rabbi Yisai, you've got to turn to your kids and say to them, "This is a beautiful carpet! This is beautiful! It's schmutzadik, it's dirty, that's beautiful in the eye of a Jewish beholder." When in my mother's house, there's a poem that's written on the wall there, and basically, very short, the poem is basically a letter from the host, I don't know, the mother of the house, to the guest to come inside, apologizing about all the toys on the floor, and the smeared the chocolate and the fingerprints all down the walls, and all the things that are messy in the house and unkept, you know, something I can kind of identify with, but you guys probably have no idea. And so, the poem says, "I ask you to excuse me for all this mess, but I want to tell you something, that we sat today and you played with my children and we had a good time, and even though the doorknobs don't shine, the eyes of my children will. And therefore, when you come home and you had your hard day work and you've been messing out different kinds of people and the boss drives you crazy and this customer, the guy, and all you want is a bit of peace and quiet, and you walk inside and then you tripped over the umbrella and your wife left her shoe in the middle and poked you inside your foot and you fell out, and you look at, and why is this not, our first reaction should be, this is beautiful, Baruch Hashem, have a wife. Baruch Hashem, she can afford to buy shoes. Baruch Hashem, I have kids who make this mess. But you go to the whole different lookout. Our outlook should be different. That must be in the eyes of us, must be beautiful. When the Torah says, Eine Leah Rakois, yes, the Torah is telling you something beautiful here. Yes, we all know external beauties tells us about the inner beauties, by the big tzaddikas. It's true and all that. But if you see Eine Leah Rakois, why were her eyes like that? Why were her eyes like that? Because she had used those eyes for davotiers, from her eyes, Davini Takush Baruch Hu, many days, years, that she shouldn't have to marry Esau. And therefore, this look at her wasn't pleasant. When you look at that, the Torah says, Eini Lei Rakos, wow, that's beautiful. The Torah is telling you something beautiful about her, because of tears, because of tefillahs, this is how she looks. We've got to look at it and say, that's beautiful. I'll tell you two more points. One point is, David HaMelech was once dancing the Chovet HaTorah when they made this Hachnosas HaOroim. They brought the Oroim to the Beis Hashem. And David HaMelech was dancing, and Michal, his wife, looked out the window and saw her husband, David HaMelech, dancing in a way which looked somewhat unbecoming of a king, in the way that he was somehow exposed. And she, you know, good Jewish woman, when her husband comes home, told her, listen, did you pay the bills, you know? How much Torah did you learn? Were you respectable? Were you, as a king, was supposed to be dignified? And she told him, I think you weren't as dignified as a king should be. And he answered back to her and told her, nah, I didn't expose myself enough. I should have danced even more when it came to Kovod HaTorah. So she looked at the scene and thought to herself, no, perhaps this is out of line. David HaMelech tell them, no, for Kovod HaTorah, it's beautiful, dance away, make as much levity, whatever it needs. Wait, it doesn't look so dignified. Name in the Torah's eyes, that's called beautiful. And just one last story. This story, I believe I read in the book Rebbetzin Kanievsky, which came out a year or two ago. And I read it right when it came out, so I haven't seen it later, but I believe the story is over there. And Reb Chaim Kanievsky had his house painted, or somebody painted his house for him, or the apartment, or the room got repainted. And there was a certain shelf that on the wall where the Rebbetzin would light Shabbos licht, and there was quite a few candles there, and over the years it was kind of blackened, that part of the wall. And so he told the painter, please don't paint that part of the wall, leave that wall. You know, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. We think a nice expensive apartment, nice beautiful car, all these beautiful things and nice things, they're beautiful and nice. But Rabbi Yisrael, when it comes to things of Yiddishkeit, oh, burnt. You know, someone, when I told the story to someone in the lady in the audience, she says to me, yeah, my husband burnt the door. They used to light them in there on the doorpost, between the doors. And he put a little bit too close to the doorpost. There's a mark now on the, you know, burnt. You know, every time a guest comes inside, he knows, no, my husband told me, nay. It's a beautiful mitzvah. And I accepted it. I said, that's wonderful. Yes, a burnt mark from menorah, that's a beautiful sign in a Jewish house. Let me just end off with a tefillah that I could, we say, loylonu Hashem, loylonu kileshim chotein kovod. I must say, personally speaking, it's a difficult sentence to say. Are we always really asking, not loylonu, but for kovod HaKadosh Baruch Hu? But I call upon him, let's try b'mechaven, that although the Jewish people now don't look in the nicest light amongst the goyim, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we had an external good look as well, we're not asking for ourselves, we're asking for you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if the world would see a beautiful nation, then it would be a much bigger Kiddush Hashem. And that's why we should ask, no sorrows, everything should be great for the Yidden. There should be a Gevaldi Kiddush Hashem that should come out of it. And the goyim will look at us and then say to us, oh, this is the Yiddish nation, let's go and ask them, how do we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Thank you very much for listening.